Hello and welcome to all of you here on the African continent and around the world. This is Let's Talk About Health in Africa on Utano Podcast with me, Lenia Suwenda. Today on Utano Podcast, what role should we expect global pharmaceutical companies to play in shaping the future of healthcare in Africa, especially on improving access to medical products? Pharmaceutical companies are the innovators, developers, manufacturers, and distributors of medicines and vaccines that are needed by so many around the world. They are key partners in the global efforts to advance universal health coverage and to improve access to treatment. Considering their size, resources, pipelines, portfolios, and global reach, many argue that large pharmaceutical companies have a critical role to play in improving access to medical products. But the challenge of access to treatment is one that has proved very difficult to solve. More than 2 billion people all over the world do not have sufficient access to essential medical products. How do we work together with all partners, including those in the pharmaceutical industry, to solve this problem? My guest today is Dr. Lutz Hegermann, the President of Global Health and Sustainability at Novartis in Switzerland. I ask Dr. Lutz Hegermann, how can we ever close the gap in unmet medical needs when those needs continue to grow, driven in part by climate change, which has been accelerating the frequency of disease outbreaks? Also, at what stage of the innovation process should global pharma companies begin planning their access strategies, and would that make a difference in closing this gap? And finally, why should pharmaceutical companies not just be about manufacturing medicines, and what else can they do? And what role should they be playing in overcoming the barriers to access confronting many of our communities today? Dr. Hegermann, thank you for coming on to Let's Talk About Health in Africa on Utano Podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much, Linnaeus, for having me. Look forward to our conversation.
Excellent. So let's dive right in. Now, more than 2 billion people do not have access to essential medical products around the world. And now climate change is driving the emergence of new disease outbreaks when existing needs are currently not being met. Do you think it will ever be possible for us to close the gap in access to treatment?
No, I think that's a very pertinent question. And let me start describing a little bit how I see the role of climate change and what additional challenges that entails, but also how we can link addressing the challenges of climate change to some of the underlying pre-existing challenges that we had in the health system. So I think it's fair to say that, of course, with the climate change, we see also a change in disease patterns. This is particularly clear, of course, for vector-borne and communicable diseases. And it is less clear, but there is more and more evidence, of course, that this also affects chronic conditions, whether it's hypertension, whether it's pulmonary conditions, but even mental health. And there is an increasing body of evidence that very, very clearly shows that diseases are spreading, that the pattern is changing, and it's all for the worse. When we look at the factors of climate change. So you could say that human health has become the face of climate change. And the way how we need to address it as a large pharmaceutical company is to double down on the core business that we are doing. Our mandate is to develop new and innovative medicines for the highest disease burdens. And of course, if we do that well, and if we do that consistently well, then we are making a contribution to addressing this issue that's only going to be further exacerbated as a consequence of climate change. But more specifically, I believe we need to ensure that we are prepared for the spread and new variants of infectious diseases. And you may be aware that at Novartis, we have committed in Kigali at the summit 2 years ago to invest $250 million into research and development for malaria and neglected tropical diseases. Mm. Because we believe that with these diseases changing and further spreading, we need to innovate, we need to have better tools, medicines that are more efficacious, potentially addressing emerging resistance, that are better tolerable. If I think about some of the neglected tropical diseases, you could argue that we cannot fight tomorrow's issues with yesterday's tools. So we need to further invest, and I would like to see even more investment both on the public and at the private sector coming into infectious diseases. But then in addition to that, we also need to ensure, and this is more the access question, that we continue not only to innovate, but to make available and to lower barriers to access for non-communicable diseases. And as I said earlier, whether that's pulmonary condition, cardiovascular conditions, mental health conditions, to address that as well. And then in parallel to that, every investment that we make into the health system under the notion of health system strengthening needs to be directed to build resilient health systems that will be ever more important in the face of climate change, but also many other factors that are making our lives a bit more difficult. If you just think about geopolitical challenges and potentially forced migration, it all comes down to having highly resilient health systems. And here, I believe we need to place more emphasis on the primary healthcare systems rather than investing into tertiary care centers only. And then last but not least, and that brings me back to climate change, we also need to make sure that we not only adapt to the consequences of climate change, but that we also help mitigate the climate change. And here, like many other companies at Novartis, we have very ambitious targets to reduce our own environmental footprint, for instance, becoming net zero by 2040, but also saving water where we can, saving energy, saving waste where we can, in order to make sure that we do our business in a way that is highly respectful of planetary health as well. I think if we continue doing this, then we can address both. We can mitigate and adapt to climate change, but at the same time, we can also continue bringing more medical innovation to more patients globally, so that those two elements ultimately work synergistically.
Now, you mentioned, of course, the importance of, you know, working together and investing in primary healthcare. That's going to be quite critical to detecting the climate-driven disease outbreaks that are anticipated to accelerate in the coming years. And then you mentioned also the challenges with the need to improve access to chronic disease medications. Now, there are so many challenges. You know, some areas, of course, disease areas, we do so much better than others. And the existing models of delivering products to patients aren't really working for everything. If you think about access to cancer medications on the African continent. And the thing is that we're not reaching people on the last mile. Some have argued that access should not be an afterthought, that pharma companies try to figure out once you have a product and you need to ship it out to patients. What are your reflections on this? At what stage of the innovation process, in your opinion, is it best for pharmaceutical companies to start planning their access strategies to make sure that those products actually meet the maximum number of patients who need them?
Well, that's a very important topic that you are touching upon, and one that I've been thinking for the last 10 plus years. And together with my colleagues at Novartis, you may know that in 2017, we made an access commitment whereby we said we have a set of principles that we are applying systematically across all our operations. And this is essentially touching upon three areas. We have to make sure that the medicines that we develop are fit for purpose in resource-constrained settings. We cannot just assume that the world operates like high-income countries, and then you struggle to essentially utilize the innovations with fewer resources or in a resource-constrained setting. So that's critically important. Then what is also, and it's often singled out, is the question about affordability and availability of the medicines. And here, of course, pricing is one element. I don't think it is the most important one, because that's relatively easy for a pharmaceutical company to solve through a tiered pricing approach, for instance. But what is much more important is the availability part, where we've seen historically that it has taken 10 years for innovation to reach Africa after it had been launched in Europe or in North America. And we've been able to bring this down to a zero time gap. So for one of our most innovative medicines, we got regulatory approval in the Republic of Ghana the same day as we did in Switzerland, our home country. So this can be done so that that Africa doesn't have to wait for innovation for years and years and years to reach the continent.
Yes.
And then thirdly, and in my experience, that is the most critical but also the most difficult part to address, is the question of the health system's readiness to deploy innovation in the best interest of the patients. And what we very often see is that we are lacking the continuum of care or the referral pathway, that patients are being diagnosed in the community way too late, and with that, sometimes do not even qualify for disease-modifying treatments anymore. You mentioned cancer therapy, which I think is a very sad example, that patients are being diagnosed way, way too late in Africa relative to other parts of the world. And then, of course, their prognosis becomes much less positive than what we see elsewhere. So we always need to consider the areas in the health system that we can work together with others in order to reduce those barriers. Coming to the question of timing, I think you can never start too early thinking about access. Our commitment here and how we are living it at Novartis is that we, at the latest, at phase 2B clinical development, very seriously think about access. Why is it phase 2B? Because that's the clinical development phase where you know the characteristics of your medicine. And I think you first need to understand what that medicine is going to look like before you can have a meaningful discussion around the access barriers. Earlier on, it's still very hypothetical and you don't know, is it going to be a tablet? Is it going to be an injection? What is your patient population? But I think once all of these characteristics become better known, then we need to be very clear and very focused on the access question. And that needs to go through all the further development stages.
You mentioned, of course, the clinical trials, and one issue that people have been talking about a lot since the COVID pandemic is the issue of clinical trial diversity. Is that something also that you think really plays into this issue of access in terms of, you know, how clinical trials are structured in terms of participants in those trials?
Yeah, no, I think clinical trial diversity is very important from a number of different perspectives. I mean, first and foremost, we would like to test new medicines in the population that essentially is going to benefit from those medicines. And the world is a diverse place, so I believe that we need to bring that diversity into our clinical trials as well. And we are increasingly finding ways to do this, whether it is in one country like in the US, where historically the black population was not included in clinical trials. And we have started a program together with the universities and with medical centers to see how we can change it, because you cannot just fix the outcome. You need to go deep into some of the underlying root causes. And in terms of geographic diversity, it's exactly the same. There is very, very clearly a disproportionality between the size of the population in Africa and the size of trial population and trial participation, which is just about 1% of the global trial population comes from Africa. So we'll need to build clinical trial centers, and then we'll need to make sure that we recruit African patients into those clinical trials. And the benefit is twofold, because it gives us data in the patient population that ultimately should be benefiting from those innovations. But it also is a first step towards access, because physicians gain experience with a new medicine, which then makes them more likely to prescribe it to their patients. So I think the benefits are manifold, and we are an active part of a number of consortia that's trying to work on that and ultimately improve the trial participation from the African continent.
Yes, you mentioned, of course, the timelines, how you were able to gain regulatory approval with the same time frame between Ghana and Switzerland. That's really encouraging because I was in Egypt and we were discussing, in fact, this very question of the regulatory side of things, you know, and how that contributes to those delays of bringing medicines to patients. And of course, there are two sides to this. It's the regulatory side, but it's also pharma, what it's doing to bring those products to patients sooner. So it's great to see efforts going on both sides to make sure that African patients can get access a lot sooner. Now, often when one is looking at this challenge of access, especially in the African context, one of the things that people often bring up is that, well, part of the challenge is that there's very little innovation happening on the African continent. Now, others argue that it's not feasible to do to innovate on the African continent. I'd really love to get your view on this. I mean, can Africa innovate not just for itself, but for the world? And does it matter actually where innovation is happening in terms of, you know, the question of access? Why is it important that innovation should also happen in Africa?
Yeah, I think that's a great thought. And I must say, what gives me great confidence is that I do see indeed a lot of innovation happening in Africa. And the question is, well, if it's not visible, it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. And maybe we'll need to bring it more to the stage and shine a light on the innovation that happens in Africa. And one approach that we have taken is to partner with the Norskin Foundation to create what we call the Health Tech Innovation Hub that is in Kigali and serves as an innovation center for the entire continent. And I'm very encouraged to see innovation teams or innovators from all over Africa coming to this hub, benefiting from in-kind support, but also a stronger link to the financial community to unlock private capital that goes behind those innovations. And it was just a few months ago, was at one of the conferences where I met with many of those innovators and was really impressed by the ingenuity and creativity that exist on the continent. So I think we need, and this is one step, of course, many more steps need to happen to create a framework and an ecosystem that is more conducive of fostering innovation. Because I believe there is some really, really great ideas and bright people on the African continent that could ultimately then help first bring innovation that's made in Africa for Africa. But as you have heard me say, I would even go one step further and to say, if there's great innovation or once there's great innovation that is available for Africa, how can other parts in the world benefit from this as well? Because if you think about some of the resource constraints that we see in Africa, they are no different from constraints that underserved patients, even in high-income countries, experience. Mm. To give you one example, we are working with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation on a totally new definition of gene therapy for sickle cell disease, which, as you know, is highly prevalent in Africa. The idea here is to develop a gene therapy that can be injected into the patient with all of this fancy infrastructure and intensive care units and essentially address this gene defect and cure the disease. If that were successful, then we can deploy it at scale in Africa, but you could also take it to underserved populations in the US, you can take it to Brazil, you can take it to India, you can take it to any other country where patients with sickle cell disease live. And that to me would be a great example of innovation initially from Africa for Africa, but then taking it into the world that essentially all eligible patients could benefit from it. And I'm very optimistic that over the next decade or so, we will see those things happening.
That's great to hear your optimism, and that innovation is happening on the African continent, but it's not always as visible as it should be, and that we need to perhaps invest more on it, in it. And there's talent to actually drive such investment and take it forward. And now to conclude, Dr. Hegerman, with all of the challenges that we are facing today, specifically the expected increase and acceleration in the frequency of disease outbreaks, driven in part by climate change, whilst we are still facing these huge unmet medical needs, why should pharmaceutical companies not be just about manufacturing medicines? And what role should we expect pharma companies to play in overcoming all of these various barriers that we are that are confronting us today?
Yeah, I think we need to step up to the meeting the expectations that society at large have towards us. And what we've heard over years again and again is that society values the innovation that we bring, but expect it to be coupled with a very clear access agenda, so that we innovate not for the few, but for the many. And these two elements to me are really key why we exist and what our contribution to society is. So it is really about this innovation and, equally important, the access question. And we have talked about a few things, whether it is responsible pricing and making sure there's affordability, whether it's about the time by when an innovation reaches Africa, how we can make sure that that innovation is not just on the shelf, but delivers a tangible benefit to the population. I believe that the private sector has a role to ensure that we are not just sort of doing the transaction of donating or selling or supplying medicine, but that we take a keen interest in how these medicines are being used in order to deliver the greatest societal benefit. We have to realize that, of course, there's only so much that we can do as a single organization or a collective of private organizations. And that is where the notion of partnership comes in, that is so incredibly important, that we find like-minded organizations, that we go into areas where there is a political will to change, but that we bring civil society along, that we partner with NGOs in order to allow a better ecosystem to emerge at the end. And I don't think that we can just reduce our own responsibility to the provision of medicines, but need to care about the benefit of society at large.
Yes, so innovate for the many, not just the few, and develop the ecosystem that enables actually those innovations to reach everyone who needs them. Dr. Lutz Hegerman, thank you so much for coming onto Utano Podcast today.
Thank you so much, Linias, for having me. It was a true pleasure, and good luck with your podcast series.